All right. Hi, everybody. This is Confessions of a Serial Wife. So thanks for joining. Today, I want to talk about jealousy. And this was actually kind of a question posed to me by a listener. And so I wanted to elaborate and kind of go into more detail because I think it's something that really begins in childhood, at least from my experience. So, and again, let me preface this by saying that please, when you listen to these episodes, make sure that you've listened to the earlier episodes, because I'll reference family members and stories that have been already covered. So you want to make sure that you have that background information. So my mom, she had three sisters and two brothers. Her story when she was younger is that she was abused. She says that her sisters were spoiled. They weren't as abused. She was the black sheep. So she describes scenarios where, you know, her dad, which would be my grandpa, and it's really hard to fathom this, especially with my memories of how everything worked. But apparently he would hold her head up against the wall as they beat her or slapped her or whatever. And her sisters were very slender and tall and different than her. And she was always more shapely, shall we say. And as she got older, of course, she had, you know, weight problems because she didn't exercise. There was no healthy eating, you know, that whole thing. So I think the jealousy with my mom started then towards her sisters. And I think that it was really kind of just ingrained in her from then on. I feel like if there wasn't abuse, and if this was, you know, her imagination or her whatever, something concocted in her brain, this is really kind of how it started. There was never anything that was fair in her family. I don't think she felt like things were fair. I think that she always felt like she got the short end of the stick. And when her and dad would fight when I was a kid, she would scream horrible profanities. That's how I learned all my cuss words. But the things that she would scream things like, "I never get nothing. I never get nothing." And to me, I mean, as an adult, I never, you know, realized this until much older looking back. But as an adult, I really feel like that was her kind of screaming that she doesn't get attention, that it's not fair, that, you know, she gets the short end of the stick. And I think because of her lack of education, I feel like she didn't know how to express that. And that was kind of the whole beginning of her problems. I feel like she felt shortchanged and, you know, it just kind of grew and harbored. Instead of having the know-how to maybe analyze this and think about and, you know, even realize that this is how she's feeling, it just grew into this nightmarish ball. And before you knew it, it was jealousy, really, is what it was. And it was stemmed at her sisters. So they don't talk. They haven't talked since I was a little kid. And if the sisters reach out, then, you know, it's always like for some seedy reason, according to my mom, you know, it's never good. It's always bad. There's always some backhanded thing. I've never seen those backhanded things, but according to my mom, that's how it is. And growing up witnessing that, and growing up in situations where, well, it was just my sister and myself, and there's a 10-year difference, and I've already talked about how, you know, I was a kid. I'm like 10 years old, you know, I'm gangly and chunky, and, you know, I don't want to shower, and, you know, I want to play outside and be dirty. And my sister at that point is 20 then, you know, so she's beautiful and adult and working. And my mom would compare that, to, you know, compare us to each other to where it was just horrible. It was always like, you know, why can't I be like my sister? And when I was younger, like, you know, 5, 6, and she was 15, 16, my mom would try to bribe my sister to go to school because, of course, you know, that's the 70s and nobody wants to go to school. It's all free love and, you know, whatever. And to try to bribe her to go to school, she would get a whole new bedroom set, a whole new wardrobe, a car. You know, I mean, the gifts were just unruly. It was as if we were like rich, just spoiling my sister. And of course, you know, my dad talked about how beautiful my sister was, and my mom did too. And here I was still this gangly kid. And so, I mean, it just wasn't fair comparing us like that because I didn't even have a chance before I thought I was worthless and, you know, gangly and fat. And, you know, I mean, I was just a kid. It was normal. So I think that all started from my mom's inability to realize how she was and the impacts that had come from her own family life that had bled over. And it was just kind of this horrible, you know, like a virus. It just spread. So when I was young, I would, you know, cut the heads off my Barbies and cut their faces off. And, you know, and you might look at that and think, oh, my God, you know, that's a cry for help. That's like a symptom of something. I was doing it so I could see how they worked, what was on the inside, because, you know, you have back then they had the kissy face Barbies and, you know, they did different things. They would puff air and, you know, weird things. And I wanted to see how it worked. So I was more analytical, I guess. I wanted to dissect it. I was like the engineer of the family, but, you know, nobody realized that. Nobody fed that. Nobody did anything. And they were focused on my sister, you know, trying to get her to go to school, trying to get her to, you know, do whatever. And it just always seems like it was like that. And even listening to myself, you know, I'm hearing myself say this stuff, and it just sounds like I'm totally jealous of my sister. So I guess I want to say at this point that, you know, I mean, I have been jealous of my sister. We've talked in the past, and I think that maybe she even had little bouts of jealousy towards me. I think that it's a product of how we were raised, and I mean, I'm conscious of it. I try to work past that and think through that. And I think that that's the only thing that you can do. I'm trying not to blame my mom, although I do think that it stemmed from her upbringing, and I think that it just caught on like wildfire. But again, I think that it was that ignorance, you know, that helped fuel it, because I don't think anybody realized what was happening. So, you know, I was kind of raised with that. You know, once we moved up to that little mountain town, I was, you know, dressed from a thrift store and my clothes didn't fit and they were just horrible. I was, you know, mocked and, you know, everything else, and I started gaining weight. And then my sister and mom and dad bought her a house. So she literally had her own house right next door. I didn't even have my own bed, but my sister had her own house. And, you know, it was just little things like that. It was just, it was a terrible experience. Because of that, it has made me ultra paranoid. So everything has to be fair for my kids. When my parents, before my dad passed, when he was healthy and they would come over, dad would bring a little trinket, you know, he picked up at the thrift store or whatever, you know, or mom would bring something. And if they only brought one thing for one kid, I would get really upset because I did not want my kids to feel like one was better than the other, or one was favored over the other. And of course, you kind of have to cater that to the person. You know, I can't buy a Barbie for a boy and a Barbie for a girl. My son would have flipped out. And it's the same with attention, because they're different people. So it has to be kind of specialized, I guess, to each of them. But I was still so paranoid that I tried to do everything equal. When they were young, they had the same amount of Christmas presents because I did not want one of them to feel left out. As they've gotten older and presents have gotten more expensive, it's changed to the same amount of money. So even this Christmas, I've started Christmas shopping, and I literally have it itemized out to where it will come within $20 of each other. And in my brain, something like causes me to worry about even that $20 deficit. You know, like one of them is going to feel bad. Their presents are totally different, but it's, you know, oh my gosh, you know, maybe I put $20 in one of the stockings to compensate. You know, it's like, it's really, it's become that ingrained just because of how I was raised and how it's made me feel and how my relationship with my sister has turned out. And my mom still has that relationship with her siblings. And so I'm, you know, I've kind of gone the bipolar opposite. You know, I'm just the extreme opposite. I'm ultra paranoid. On that same note, though, it goes way past family. So once you have that little jealousy seed, it sticks with you. And actually, I'm going to throw a quick little one of those little ads in here and take a break and clear my throat. And then I'll be right back. So bear with me, stick with me for this little short ad, and I'll be right back. All right, thanks for bearing with me. I'm back. So as I got older, and, you know, after I was already divorced for the first time, of course, still a teenager, I was, you know, I was in a good relationship with my parents. I think I moved back and forth for a while between the Valley and, you know, their place up there. And at one point when I was up there, I must have been, I don't know, 18, maybe 19, but boy, not much older than that. I was living up there and the same thing. So you always strive to have an acceptance from your parents. You always want them to love you and think the best of you, and you know, you want them to be proud of you, I guess is what you want deep down. And so you, you know, you try to be friendly with them. You try to be like the good kid, you know, and that's kind of always where I found myself, trying to be the good kid. In this one example that I'm thinking of, my mom had run into, I don't even know, a friend, an old friend, somebody in the valley. And this person had a son, and the son was older. He was, I don't know, 29 probably. And my mom came back up to the mountain town and told me all about this guy because, you know, her big thing was being married and I was divorced. So that wasn't good. So she came up telling me about this guy. And, you know, Dad was there too. Dad kind of played it up too and kind of giggled and laughed and, you know, whatever. And he went along with Mom more than anything, I think. You know, kind of, I don't know, probably just to, you know, save himself from so much stress and heartache. You know, figuring I'd survive, I don't know. But, so Mom had talked this guy up. And she said that she wanted me to call him. That this guy was just, you know, the best thing since sliced pie, and it was awesome, and it would be so happy for me, and his dad or his parents or something, you know, was well off. I don't know, something like that probably. I don't remember exactly, but so I called this guy, and he sounded like he was from New Jersey with a really thick accent, and I thought it was kind of cool. I didn't have a problem with it. It was fine. And so we made arrangements for him to come up to the mountain town to meet me. And I guess I just assumed that, you know, it was fine. He would be driving, whatever. So as I recall, and mind you, this was from many moons ago, but he showed up. And he was late. And he was late because he didn't have a car and had to ride his bicycle. It's an hour drive by car up into the mountains. And so he rode his bicycle up there. He was in tight blue jeans and some, I don't know, kind of yuppie, you know, shoes that you would see probably in New Jersey. They were nice. He had on a black tank top and a button-up shirt over top of the tank top that was buttoned way down, and the tank top was pulled down. So he had all of this black hair kind of billowing out of the top of his tank top and through the unbuttoned buttons of his shirt, which was weird. You know, that's like a 70s thing, I guess, you know, I don't know. It just wasn't my style. And he was way older than me. And he was, I suppose he was attractive. He seemed very nice. And we decided that we would walk down to the restaurant, aka bar, because up there, you know, that's where it is. It's, you eat at the bars. And so we walked down and we ate, and the conversation was casual. There definitely wasn't a love connection. And we started to walk back up to Mom and Dad's store. And as we're leaving the bar, that's when I realized how funny Mom was being. And Mom was being really kind of flirtatious, I guess. And I don't remember what I said, but I said something. Not about that, but just, you know, just something. And she kind of went off on me, like belittling me. And then it was really blatantly obvious that she was kind of smitten with this guy. And then it kind of hit me what was happening. It was like, she thought this guy was awesome and she was actually playing against me to try to win this guy's favor. My married mother, who's 32 years older than me, you know, had set me up on this date just to, I guess, make herself feel better, to try to win him over me, or I don't even know what the deal was. It was the most bizarre experience I've ever had. And we walked up to the store from the bar, and that's, I think I even stopped talking at one point because it was so, I don't know, at that point it was just grotesque. Looking back, it's still grotesque, but it was something that, it was just so bizarre, so kind of irrational in my mind. You just, you know, how do you, I don't, so my mom's always been kind of plump. I've never looked at her as like a sexual object or like some, you know, gorgeous babe that I should be, you know, worried about my boyfriends with. But on that occasion, it was really weird. It was, I don't know, I guess that's probably the best way I can describe it, is just really weird. That's the first time that I've ever noticed that. And I think that's really young to notice something like that, to feel that way. I don't know. I don't think that I've noticed that too many other times. So there was a weird instance with the kids' dad, and it was while we were living in the little apartment the dad built. So the way the apartment was built on was there was like a little tiny hallway that had two doors, one locked from the inside of the apartment and one locked from the inside of the bathroom that was on the other side. And that bathroom door, the bathroom was connected to the store, so patrons would use it, whatever. And I always kept that door locked. And there was one time when, I don't know, I don't even remember where I was, maybe in the store somewhere, I don't know. But the story was, oh, and you know, if you were laying on the sofa in the little apartment, and you were in that little hallway, you could look through that crack and actually see what was happening on the sofa. If it was light in there and the hallway was dark. And it was like a small hallway. Like, I don't even think it was 4 feet long. But there was an instance where the kids' dad was, you know, and we were young. So this was totally normal, you know, to play around and him to be naked waiting for me, whatever. And so he was apparently laying on the sofa in front of the TV, naked. And my mom went through the hallway and without knocking, just walked in on him. And of course, got an eyeful. And that was also very weird, I thought, because she would normally yell my name as she went through the hallway or knock or whatever. And so it was really strange that that would occur like that. And I always kind of felt weird about that. And maybe it was kind of reminiscent of this weird guy on the bicycle. So I don't know. There, you know, it just passes on. When you are raised with it, then, you know, you have the family jealousy. I think I always wanted to have girlfriends, but I think that that was always kind of a sideline that impacted that. So it was always, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it was me wanting to steal boyfriends. I never stole boyfriends. I don't think I ever did. But I think that it was always kind of the thought that I wanted them to like me better. I wanted them to want me more. And maybe that was it. Maybe I wanted the girls to like me more. And, you know, so it just didn't work out. That's just a bad thing. People pick up on that. And so I had always a problem with my relationships as a kid and as a teenager and growing up. There is always just, you know, a jealousy factor. It's filtered into my relationships. Of course, it doesn't help that my relationships have done weird things and been weird people. Like, you know, well, I was going to say another example, but it's already been discussed and I don't want to bring it up. But all of those things with my significant others have been in previous episodes. So by my not sharing again, I'm not keeping anything from you. It's just that I don't want to have that in my brain for the day. It also goes through to jobs though too, you know, so it impacts my career. I remember when I was working at that thrift store at 19 and sleeping with the manager. Actually, I wasn't even 19 then. I was 17, just turned 18. And there was a supervisor position, and there was a very qualified woman that put in for it, and I put in for it. I think I discussed this in a previous episode too. And when she got it, I mean, it was, looking back, it was totally on her qualifications. She was very good. But I took that as it was a slap in my face. It was like a personal gesture at me because of how I was with the boss. Even in my current job, well, not my current job now, but my past job, my recent job after college, where I was working under that bully. My girlfriend from college, you know, she did very well in that job. She worked her tail off. She was a bitch, but she did very good. She was a very good worker. And some of my friends, like one of my friends, he commented, you know, well, she would have done this or something. And boy, I gotta tell you, it hit me so wrong and so hard. And instantly, it was like, you know, I'm less. I'm instantly less. You know, it's like I'm feeling like I'm worthy, but I'm really not worthy because I'm less than she is. And I'm not, but it's just how that comment made me feel. And all of that comes back to being raised in a situation like this. Constantly being compared and wanting to feel worthy and wanting to feel like more and always being less, always being reminded that you're less. So, you know, again, this kind of stemmed from a conversation that I was having with a listener and a question that was posed to me. And I just wanted to elaborate on that and kind of go into further detail because jealousy is so harmful. And if you don't recognize it off the bat, you end up doing crazy things, and it really, it's like a disease. It spreads to the other people, you know. I'm not proud, but I've, you know, when my husband had an appointment, I've driven there on the sly to make sure that he was where he said he was going to be, just because I had a weird feeling, just because that's in my brain. That'll probably always be in my brain. I'm not sure there's a way to escape it. And unfortunately, that's just how it works. So hopefully this will enlighten things for you if you're experiencing any of this, or if you know anybody that's experiencing any of this. You know, it's important to catch it and not spread it, not let it eat away at you so that every little thing becomes that. And really, that's, I don't know, that's probably all I have to say on that. So anyway, thank you for listening again. I'm sorry it took so long to get this episode out. I've just been having crazy days. So I appreciate you listening. Until next time, bye-bye.